storytelling for the world of audiobooks and podcasts. Sales of digital audiobooks, that's books you can download, are on the rise. The Association for American Publishers reports revenue for downloaded audio grew 27% last year. More and more people are listening to books and podcasts on their smartphones as they commute to work, exercise, or just sit outdoors on a lawn chair. The publishing world has caught on. Publishers are producing more audiobooks too. 25,000 titles last year. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn from some of the people here in Maine who are producing audiobooks, podcasts, and radio dramas. Sometimes they're the work of a single person. Other times they involve different actors and voices, sound effects, and more. Either way, they are changing the way we think about books and plays. Maine Calling spins a good yarn. But first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. We all know someone who has a knack for telling a good tale. It might be the uncle who regales us with stories of our parents' youthful indiscretions, or maybe it's a coworker who can make his weekend sound like a great adventure. Well, today we're going to hear from three storytellers who not only know how to spin a good yarn, but also how to turn their stories into audiobooks and podcasts. We have Tim Sample here. He's a humorist, author, and storyteller. His latest project is the audiobook Drunken Fireworks, a story by Stephen King that is only available as an audiobook and was just released. Skylar Bayer is a marine biology PhD student based at the University of Maine's Darling Marine Center. She is a producer for the Story Collider podcast and records the Strictly Fish Wrap Science Radio Hour podcast. And Frederick Greenhalge is a writer, director, producer, and the founder of Final Rune Productions, which makes audio dramas. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you a podcast or audiobook consumer? Do you just want to know how to tell a good story? Give us a call. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to all of you today. What a fun show. And one of the great parts of today's program is that we have clips from some of the things that you all have been working on. So this is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to start with you, Tim Sample. I have in my hand the brand new audiobook, Stephen King's Drunken Fireworks. I understand this is hot off the presses.
Absolutely. Completely hot off the presses and just came out the 30th, 2 days ago. And it is, Steve emailed me yesterday to say it is the number one download on iTunes and the number one CD sales on Amazon.com. So that's pretty exciting.
That is exciting. Well, let's get a little tantalizing clip.
Yes, you could say. Ma and me did a good deal of drinking and lounging around out to camp after Daddy died. No law against it, is there? If you don't get behind the wheel, that is, and we never did. We could afford it, too, because by then we were what you might call the idle rich. Never would have expected that, Dad being a carpenter all his life. Called himself a skilled carpenter. And Ma always added, barely skilled and mostly distilled. That was her little joke.
And Tim, I understand that this recent book is not a horror story.
It is not. I got a call from Steve back in December, and I said to somebody at Simon & Schuster, when Steve King calls you up with an idea, it's a little bit like you get on the crosstown bus and you shut the door behind you and suddenly you're zipping on a high-speed train across Europe or something. And he really, he had just had this brainstorm to do this, and it's a great story, but it's not a horror story. It's a very Maine-y story, wonderfully Maine-y in the way that Steve can really nail it. But it's this tale of a feud between locals and people from away on a lake in Maine. And the fun part of it for me in the narration, I finished the narration in April, but it's set. The story, it begins on the 5th of July, 2015. So it happens right now. So there's this big national rollout and download and all this kind of stuff. So you can kind of listen to the story as it unfolds more or less in real time contemporaneously, which is really super fun. It was fun for me, and it's pretty tongue-in-cheek. I think it's hysterical.
Well, I can't wait to listen to it, and I'm so happy that I have a copy here. We're going to turn to you now, Skylar. And before we talk about the projects you work on, if you all don't think you've heard of Skylar Bayer, you probably actually have, because a video that you were in from the Colbert Report kind of went viral. So we're going to play a clip of this and see if this rings a bell for a lot of our audience.
What was really in that bucket?
Gonads. Scallop gonads.
A woman obsessed.
They have pretty large gonads relative to their body size. This is probably 30 to 40% of their body weight.
So, mystery solved. All wrapped up in a pretty little bow. Or was it?
I think that's pretty much it.
So, Skylar, what's it like to be known as the scallop gonads girl or woman?
Or the lonely lady scientist is actually one of the clips from the Colbert Report. But actually, it's been great. I have never received a single negative comment about that publicity. It really was a good thing in the science community. And a lot of invertebrate biologists were really happy to see that the mollusks made it onto the Colbert Report. So it was a lot of fun. I mean, it really was a mishap where this fisherman, Andy Mays, who I was working with to get gonad samples from the summer, because everyone kind of knows that scallops reproduce in the summer, but to really know when exactly, you have to see how their gonad weight changes over time. So I wanted to see how Mount Desert Island scallops were, you know, when they were actually spawning. And he put them in the wrong car, and from there, you should just really watch the clip.
I remember reading the story before it even made it to Colbert Report.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
sort of a big deal. But let's talk about why you're here today. You know, you're part of a project called Story Collider, and after listening to a few clips, I'm thinking it's sort of like Moth Radio Hour for science. Would you say that's right?
Yeah, the Story Collider is a great group of people, and I got involved with them in late 2013. Ben Lilly and Aaron Barker, the senior producers down in New York City, got started about 5 years ago. And really what they wanted to do is to humanize science and have scientists tell stories that, you know, have some sort of emotional component to it. We say for everyone throwing a pitch that it needs to be, you need to have a story about it, something that's changed in you personally from that story. And it's also about showing how human stories often involve science. You know, a lot of medical stories, giving birth, deciding whether or not to pull the plug on your parents. It all is possible because of science.
Okay, well, we have a clip here for Story Collider.
Third grade show and tell is a high stakes game, especially in Mr. Denholm's class at Castleview Elementary School in Riverside, California.
Somewhere, rational or not, I had this vague, dark vision of the city just coming unraveled.
So I'm a medical actor. I am someone that acts out a character that has an ailment for medical students. But a few months ago, I show up to work thinking that that day I was gonna have an STD, and I get there and my supervisor hands me the schedule and he says there's been a change and that today I'm going to give birth. And I'm going to give birth 3 times.
They're all sharing stories about science. Story Collider, a podcast of true personal stories about science told live on stage.
And how is Story Collider doing?
Story Collider is doing great. I just hired a new person, Liz Neely, to help with managing the organization. It's been growing. We've been doing events all over the country. And I've helped produce 2 shows in Maine in the last year. And we have a third show at One Longfellow Square in Portland, actually July 22nd, so 20 days from now. It's going to be a great show. And it's really just a great learning experience for me. It's a lot of fun teaching people how to tell stories, good stories.
Well, Frederick Greenhalgh, want to bring you in and welcome back to Maine Calling. What you do is a little different what these guys do. Tim is reading stories that were written by Stephen King. Skylar is coming up with podcast sort of stories told live. But you are scripting yours, right?
Yeah. The easiest thing to say is we are making movies without a camera. I actually went to film school and decided that I didn't actually want to make movies, but I used a lot of the techniques I learned to make these sort of fully immersive, lack of a better word, audio drama, you know, the modern equivalent of old-time radio drama. So we do things like take a group of actors into subterranean caverns with field recording equipment, that's recorded in stereo. So when they're performing their lines, it is a performance, and it feels like this is really happening, and it's a very like this is the real world. And there's a sense of being there, and we do all that with sound design and the score, which is done by a musician. So the final product doesn't feel like a text that someone's reading to you, or even like a personal story they're recounting. So it feels like you're watching a movie, except all the visual effects are in your brain.
And so why did you choose to go into audio drama instead of film?
It was somewhat accidental. I was actually in my final years at USM, and I had been in New Orleans. New Orleans had just been hit by Hurricane Katrina, and I was wanted to use a piece of art to express sort of my creative feelings about that sort of experience. And sort of on a lark, one of my classmates said, oh, we should do a radio drama. And we did some sort of very early stuff, but that became the gem of an idea. And I realized I had all these recordings that I had made myself, and I had visual material that wasn't quite appropriate for the project, but had a lot of sounds of streetcars and jazz players on the street and just commotion and street noise. So all that became this world. And then after I had that experience, I learned how fun it was to use this sound palette to conjure an image in someone's brain.
Okay, so we're going to hear a clip. This is from The Cleanse, one of Frederick Greenhalgh's productions.
The fallen world has a new ruler, and he is not a gentle man.
To resist us means to die.
Please, Saul! No, Saul!
Still.
The only one who can stop him is John Prophet and his ragtag group of heroes. But in order to save the world, they must first trust each other. Before they may even face the humans in their way, our heroes must first confront the merciless hand of nature. Listen to Season 2 of The Cleansed at thecleansed.com. Download the free podcast or pay for feature-length director's cut editions. Visit thecleansed.com or search iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud for The Cleansed. Apocalyptic adventure awaits at thecleansed.com.
Apocalyptic adventure. That's quite a...
Yeah, you took out the really fun clip there. One of the fun moments in that clip that we took out was... we had this whole sequence where the characters are going down a whitewater rapid scene. So just to give you a sense of how we make this happen, we actually had the actors in canoes in a body of water. It was a shallow body of water, not moving. But our field recordist was in hip waders. And as we're doing the lines, I'm actually shaking the canoe at unpredictable intervals. So the characters go, ah! And it's an actual reaction to the cruelty as a director. And we did throw one actor in the water, but everything was planned.
Well, usually we wait until after our first break before we go to calls, but we have a kind of special call right now. I understand Stephen King, you're on the line. Are you there?
Reality drama.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. King, I cut you off at the beginning. Start over, please.
No, I said I was just listening to you guys talk about The Cleansed and thinking it was like reality drama.
Only if certain politics keep the way they're going, but we won't get into that.
Yeah, apocalyptic.
No, this is not politics today. But Stephen King, I'm so excited that you called in, and I understand that you've been a fan of audiobooks way before they became the trendy big thing.
Yeah, I mean, I was on a, I was doing a film in Pittsburgh, and Ronald Reagan fired all the air traffic controllers, which kind of put a stop to commuting. And I had little kids, and I wanted to spend the weekends at home. And I discovered recorded books. At that time, they were on cassettes, and there was a little notice at the beginning of each one saying, "If your cassette messes up, thump it on the dashboard." And I was hooked.
Oh, my goodness. So you had this idea to release Drunken Fireworks as an audio download before the book came out. What's your thinking behind that?
Well, it's like a soliloquy. It's one guy, one main guy, and I could hear the voice in my head. And I knew that it was sort of Tim's voice that I heard, because to me he kind of sums up that whole main dialect and the main way of talking and telling stories. And I was in Rennie's department store, and I saw CDs on sale, and it was a kind of a Bert and I revival thing. And my wife and I listened to that in the car, and I said, I wonder if Tim would do Drunken Fireworks, and it it turned out, so it was great.
I wonder if Tim would do it. Yeah, Tim, were you thinking maybe you wouldn't?
What was I going to say, Steve? No, maybe another time.
You might have been busy, but you know what? Tim did an audio novella for me before from, I think it was maybe Four Past Midnight, The Sun Dog. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. 25 years ago, that was.
Was it really?
Where's My Walker? But we had a blast with that. And that was one where Steve asked me to do it because it was set. We had Pop Merrill. It was set in Castle Rock. And Steve said he's the right guy for the job. But I don't know if you remember, Steve, but we had the other three where I think it was Woody Harrelson, Willem Dafoe, and James Woods did the other three novellas, and then I did the fourth one. And everybody at the publisher said, "Well, who's this guy?" And Steve said, "Never mind, he'll do. He's good.
He'll do the job. He'll do the job." You run into some. What can I say? If you go off the grid a little bit to get talent, sometimes you run into people will kind of drag their heels. But I'm pretty good at getting my own way, and I just think the way that Drunken Fireworks turned out was terrific because I don't believe in the idea of local color exactly. I think people are people all over the world, but I do love my little patch of land, and so this was a lot of fun for me, and I enjoy it.
Well, thanks so much for calling in. I want to ask, you've had books made into movies and books that have been bestsellers and hardback and paperback. How does having a book turned into a story turned into an audio book compare? What is the difference in the experience for the listener or reader?
Well, I think it's a third dimension. I really do. I think that audiobooks, to me, are the analog of a 3D picture in the movies. You get the same story, but in the hands of a good reader. And Tim is an excellent reader, and I've been very blessed with some of the different people that I've had to read my books. And then every now and then you run into somebody who's a little bit of a clunker. I don't want to go into any details about that, but there was one guy that read a book who had a terrible cold all the time he was reading it. So even the most exciting prose came out kind of like, man, it kind of cut into the drama of the thing. So, but mostly I think that it can be a real help.
Well, Stephen King, thank you so much for calling in. Good luck with Drunken Fireworks, and I sure hope you'll come back on Main Calling.
Yes, sir. You want to remember it now. You can get that just about anywhere right now. Probably even get it at Martin's.
Yeah. We're going to try to get it in there and do a little sign-in over there, but it'll be hard to find a good source to do it. There's so many options.
Oh, my God, there's so many there, isn't there? I mean, everywhere you look, it's just something good. But
thanks for calling in, Steve.
Oh, my goodness.
That was fun.
Guys.
Oh,
thanks.
Boy. Well, my producer's giving me the hairy eyeball. We have to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get to your comments and questions on storytelling. This is Main Calling.
You make Main Calling possible, as does Silly's in Portland's East End. Open at 11 Tuesday through Friday and at 9 for brunch on the weekends, with vegan and gluten-free options. Silly's.com. And the Central Maine Heart and Vascular Institute, offering minimally invasive valve surgery. Learn more at cmhvi.org.
On the next Fresh Air, the Supreme Court correspondent for the New York Times, Adam Liptak, will analyze the term that just ended. We'll talk about some of the biggest decisions on issues like marriage equality and the Affordable Care Act, and how the court appears to have drifted toward the left in the last 9 months. Join us.
Tune in tonight at 7 o'clock for Fresh Air here on MPBN Radio. And ahead, after Main Calling at 1 o'clock in our Public Affairs Hour, Alternative Radio. Journalist, author, and filmmaker Naomi Klein recently was invited by Pope Francis to attend a top-level conference at the Vatican to advise leaders on how to fight climate change. In this address, Klein discusses climate justice, described by the Global Justice Ecology Project as the understanding that we will not be able to stop climate change if we don't change the neoliberal, corporate-based economy which stops us from achieving sustainable societies. That's ahead at 1 o'clock here on MPBN.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, what it takes to tell a good story and new ways in which all of us are hearing them. In the studio with me, Tim Sample, a humorist, author, and storyteller. His latest project is the audiobook Drunken Fireworks, a story by Stephen King that is only available as an audiobook and was just released. Skylar Bayer is a marine biology PhD student at the University of Maine. She is a producer of the Story Collider podcast and the Strictly Fish Wrap Science Radio Hour podcast. And Frederick Greenhalge is writer, director, producer, and founder of Final Rune Productions. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're going to listen to one more clip here from the audiobook Drunken Fireworks. This is, I think in this clip they're buying some fireworks, and we get a little sample of some of the different voices that Tim Sample is capable of creating.
He brought out a cylinder sitting on top of a red stick. That looks like a bottle rocket, I said, only bigger. Yeah, you could call this the deluxe model, he said. They're called Chinese peonies. They shoot twice as high, then make a hell of a flash. Some red, some purple, some yellow. You stick them in a Coke or a beer bottle, just like with ordinary bottle rockets. But you want to stand well back, because the fuses are going to fizz sparks all over the place when they lift off. Keep a towel handy so you don't start any brush fires.
Tim Sample, how much fun is it to come up with all the voices?
Well, it's great. The Sun Dog that I did for Steve 25 years ago, I think there were 16 characters. And this one was a variation on a theme because it all happened in Maine. There were local characters with different variations on the Maine dialect. But what's really fun about working with a writer of Steve's quality, and there are very few around who write, who have such a great ear for dialogue as Steve has, but you, as a narrator, you sink into the cadence of the story. And that's one of the great things that people who aren't professionals in the storytelling don't necessarily appreciate, that cadence exists in language the way it exists in music. It's a beat, it's a subtext, and there's a flow to it. And that's what allows the listener to get lost in it. And for me as the narrator, I feel like I'm the guide, I'm the professional guide down this stream of storytelling. And these characters, I get to know the characters and they emerge and they come back. But poor writing, if you're a narrator trying to translate clunky writing, it's a real challenge. Like Steve mentioned, having a clunky reader, believe me, trying to read clunky writing is also a tough gig if you're a reader. But that was a wonderful, for me, working with Steve's work is literally, it would be like playing in the NBA if you were a ball player. You're working with the very, very best and production people and everything else. So it was a pure pleasure. And it's, as you can tell from the little clips, it's a pretty funny story. There are some pretty whack, and they're wacky in that Maine-y way that is sort of plausible. And yeah, except, wow, is that weird?
Skylar, you're dealing almost all with science stories. A lot of people think science is kind of boring and dry.
Do they? I don't know about that.
How do you choose? What if somebody is pitching you a story for a Story Collider? What stands out? What do you want to hear? How do you know something's going to be a hit?
I think one of the biggest things, it's like any other story, is really bringing you there in the moment when you're there in that situation. So I told a really great story, which ended up being the reason why I became a producer, about when I went down in the submarine Alvin, a mile and a half underwater. But really what that story was about was how special that day was in relation to my father. Now, my father had a stroke about 2 years ago, and it rocked my world. And so one of the things that I really brought to that story was my emotional journey, because I actually got to call him from the bottom of the ocean. And then to be able to still talk about science to my dad after he's had a stroke in the ICU was just so critical to me personally. So bringing that emotional, personal level, that story, why it's important to you as a human and maybe also as a scientist, really is what we're looking for, is to bring us on your personal journey.
I want to ask you, Fred, about the whole concept of creating an audiobook. We heard in the promo that people can download it free. You're obviously on the cusp of sort of this new, or I shouldn't even say audiobook, audio drama, on the cusp of something that's new and growing. But is it sort of like, you know, online magazines were 20 years ago? We're not quite sure how we're going to make this work, make some money off it, hire actors. Where are we in the development of the radio drama world?
Yeah, well, I think audio drama has really exploded over the last 10 years. I think we're at a kind of seminal moment, and it's like this in a lot of parts of podcasting. I got invited to South by Southwest this year. It was the first time audio drama had, you know, that was even acknowledged that it existed, and there were actually three panels. And people are like, oh, yeah, are you like Serial? And like people like, you know, ad executives from L.A. are like, oh, podcasting is hot. And that was not the case in 2005 when I got started. It was very much the early days of podcasting. I got into it because I was a writer and it seemed difficult to become published and go through all the rigors of the traditional publishing world. And like, well, if I just make these as audio versions and put them out there, I at least give a friend a CD. And, you know, that seems somewhat antiquated by today's times. But So I was sort of at the end of the early days of podcasting, and that's sort of really ballooned and blossomed since then. And I sort of got an early cult following that could suffer through some of the production stuff I still had to figure out in the early days. And now we're producing a pretty professional quality product. We're getting invitations by some of the leading audio producers in the country and even abroad to produce stories for them. At about the same time that really cool projects like what Tim has been working on are sought after by the big publishing companies, and that very few people can actually do this. And so I'm just sort of got very lucky that I got interested in this at the right time. But really, much like other stuff on the internet, it was like we had, you know, podcasting. You could just put something up there on the internet and people all over the world could hear it for free. And you could do so with equipment that in the early 2000s and now to now is very, very inexpensive to access. So anyone who is interested in producing audio, you know, now podcasting, this seems it's going to be harder to get attention because there's so much out there, sort of like YouTube. On the other hand, you can really be a pioneer if you go into this field now, because very few people are actually working doing this.
Tim.
Yeah. One thing, when you were talking about South by Southwest, one of the things that I want to point out is that I think one of the reasons the spoken word recording, spoken word broadcast are hot, are getting a lot of attention right now, is that the world is very compressed. Things are parsed out into tiny bits and bytes. Everything's chopped up. Media is chopped up. Stuff comes at you in all this very, very convoluted ways. And there's something about the continuity of the spoken word is very deeply atavistic. It's before we had cuneiform, before we had papyrus rolls, before we had any other means. People sat around a fire and talked, and the sound of the human voice. And it's a very pleasant and calming. It's kind of a meditative level because everything. Oliver Sacks wrote that book Musicophilia about how in the moment that you're in, the music contains the next seed of the next moment. The spoken word in storytelling often has that kind of quality that it moves you along and along, and suddenly you had, as Steve was talking about that book on tape, I remember listening to a Maeve Binchy evening class driving from Cape Cod to Caribou one day, from one gig to the other. It was by her daughter in this great Irish accent. It had to be 14 hours, and her time just flew by. But there's something about that quality that it's not surprising to me that that's becoming popular as the background noise gets so staticky in media.
Right, Skylar.
Yeah, I was just going to say that's partly why the Story Collider has been so successful, is people love going to storytelling shows, like being there, watching a person tell a story and even listening to it on the podcast later. There's something about the spoken word that's so almost like primal. It really gets to you listening to someone tell a story instead of just reading it. And I love books, but there's something about listening to a human voice tell you a story that's really, really gets to you.
Okay, we're going to go to the phones. We have Chris in Westbrook. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Good.
Excellent. Well, I'm fascinated with the show. I've always been fascinated with audio stories.
When I was a kid in the 70s, I listened to the CBS Radio Mystery Theater with
yeah.
G. Great Marshall. Stuff. And I was shocked to know that when I grew up, and now we have the miracle of the internet at our fingertips, I look for a lot of the shows. The copies of them are horrible audio, and it's because they were stored on tape. Mm-hmm. And tape doesn't have the archival quality that the other radio show that CBS used to do in the 1940s and 50s, Suspense and Escape. And those shows, to be distributed to the different radio stations, were cut to a vinyl record. And now we can listen to those shows, and they're beautiful quality compared to the stuff from the 70s. So the other thing I was just going to mention is I would love to hear more, audio drama on public radio. I think it's really important. You know, I'd rather see a construction guide with a construction site, sorry, with a bunch yeah. of guys working, listening to a story than just blasting oldies or something
yeah.
silly like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and you know, Frederick, I think that you probably agree with that. But are there, with the explosion of things like satellite radio, are there now channels
yeah.
where people can
sure.
listen to these stories?
Yeah, I mean, and to sort of defend, you know, kind of what the challenges that a broadcaster like MPBN faces, like this is long format content, so it sucks up a lot of linear time, and someone who's casually tuning in halfway through a five, you know, an hour long piece, that's pretty tough. So, you know, in places like Britain, where we're blessed to have, where they're blessed to have a public radio that's like, I think there's like seven BBC radios. BBC Four plays, commissions and produces and releases a show a day and has very thriving radio drama. And the basic, you know, there's a lot of policy, there's policy behind it because it's actually a public source. They have a charter to the British people to do that. The model in America was quite different, where radio drama was commissioned by originally it was the radio people making radios are like, oh, we need to content on these radios. What should we make for content? And stories were that content. And basically the same, and then it became the advertisers that were underwriting material. And basically, you know, they assassinated radio drama in the early 50s when they decided basically forced people to move to TV or to sort of abandon their careers. So. We've lost that sort of continuity of the storytelling culture, which hasn't happened in Britain, but we are bringing it back, and we're bringing it back in a very uniquely American way. And so if you want to learn more, a lot of the old-time radio work, like the gentleman was just speaking about, is available. There's plenty of podcasts on iTunes. I do a show of my own called Radio Drama Revival, and iTunes recently worked with me and some other people. They have a curated section. If you go to the iTunes podcast landing page, they have a section called Collections. And underneath Collections, there's a modern audio drama section, which has both my shows and sort of a curated list of some of the best modern shows. So if you want to hear more of this, that's the one resource I'd suggest.
But also in Maine, I will say this for Maine. First of all, I've got to put in a plug for tape. Tape itself is not necessarily the worst thing in the world. It's how the tape is stored has a lot to do with it. But in Maine, we have a vibrant and active oral tradition. And a lot of that goes back to Marshall Dodge. It goes back to, I mean, we have some of the great storytellers, Seba Smith, Charles Farrah Brown, and all the rest of it. I'll be up on the Eastern Prom storytelling for an hour tonight, kicking off the summer series there, the Eastern Promenade series. There's going to hear storytellers tell stories in Maine has never really died out. It's had its ups and downs, but it's a very, very critical part of, and the spoken word recordings that Steve was talking about. You know, the Bert and I recordings are all still available, all the whole series, the ones that I did and the other ones that Mike and Bobby did, but the key is to understand the value of it. In order to have it and preserve it, somebody has to believe it's important, which is what we're talking about here, is yes, it's important. And that's the public consensus that it's important.
Right. And I understand there's a movement of storytelling and using it in its healing capacities. And Skylar, it sounds like that's sort of what happened to you when you told your story about going down in a submarine, that it was more than a story for you. It was something more powerful than that.
Yeah, and actually, one of the interesting things is when we help people develop their stories better before the show. So people send us a pitch. We have a phone call with them. We coach them along and what we think is good or you know, not so great. But some of the things that we'll ask will be like, well, at what point did you feel like this was a big deal? Or what was the signature moment? And they're like, you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, it was this and it really made me feel this way. And so for a lot of people, they get some sort of therapy out of it, actually. And then I think they love their story even more, has been my impression.
Okay, well, we have to take another break. Chris, thank you for your call. We'll get to more calls in just a minute.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Casella, committed to safe, efficient disposal of non-recyclable waste for all 16 Maine counties. Casella, giving resources new life. And Finance Authority of Maine, committed to expanding business and education opportunities by investing in Mainers' success. FameMaine.com.
Hi there, former President Bill Clinton here, and I want everyone to tune in to the Capitol Steps 4th of July edition of Politics Takes a Holiday. Now, as you know, my wife Hillary is running for president, and that takes her far, far away from me. Now, don't get me wrong, I love that she's running for president. I just wish she was still getting paid for making all those speeches.
She lost her shirt and I lost my pants. We can't live on an $8 million advance.
Now, I know you're wondering if Hillary used her personal email account while she was Secretary of State. Heck, I don't know. I didn't want to ask for her personal email account because I was afraid she'd ask for mine.
I like one device, not two. You get the picture?
Yes, we do.
So I became a deleter of the facts.
So please listen to the Capitol Steps 4th of July edition of Politics Takes a Holiday on this public radio station.
Two chances to hear Capitol Steps Friday evening at 7 o'clock and Saturday at 12 noon here on MPBN.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling today on the program Modern Storytelling. In the studio with us, Tim Sample. He is a humorist, author, and storyteller. His latest project is the audiobook Drunken Fireworks, a story by Stephen King that is only available at this point as an audiobook and was just released. Frederick Greenhalgh is a writer, director, and producer, and he is the founder of Final Runes Productions. Skylar Bayer is a marine biology PhD student based at the University of Maine. She's a producer of Story Collider and records the Strictly Fish Wrap Science Radio Hour podcast. Join our conversation. Give us a call. Our number 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. We're going to Ted in Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Ted.
Hey, Jennifer. How are you?
Hey.
So I'm a man in my mid-50s, and I grew up in high school listening to Marshall Dodge, Bert and I. And then, of course, as I got into college and post-college, it was Tim Sample. And then for my kids, it's been Bob Marley. And the one thing I see that all three have in common is the details, the storytelling. When I go to the comedy club, you'll hear guys who just launch one-liners, and they're fun. But what's good about Bob Marley as well as Tim and others is they're telling a story, and the fact that they can do voices, impersonations, just makes it all the better.
Yeah, I think that connection to the fabric of life, and this is really goes right to the heart of why Steve King's work is so compelling. And Steve mentioned when he was on a little while ago that, you know, he doesn't think of it as regional humor. It's just human humor, but it draws from the fabric of, I think he called it his little patch of earth. And Bob does a great job with that. And, you know, the great thing about storytelling is it's essentially this kind of humor, the stuff that Marshall did that I do that Bob does, is it's observational. We take, you know, it's actually, I wish I had a nickel for every time somebody said, I will look at something that everybody's seen 100 times. I did a thing back in one of my early albums called Trailer Life, and it was about the butterflies on the side of the trailer and the gazing balls and the pink flamingos and the tires on the roof. It was like all of this stuff, but it was like this arcane explanation of it. And people, for years afterwards, said, you know, I'd seen that 1,000 times, but now I have to laugh every time I see it because I see that. And that to me is the essence of storytelling, is to take something that's already there in the fabric of life but not noticed or pointed out or digested or understood or seen. And the storyteller, this is the vision of the arts. You know, you know, Andy Wyeth looks at a certain chunk of the coast of Maine. He sees something you don't see, but when you look at history, you go, oh, now I see that. That's the way the storytellers since time immemorial have worked, and that's what's important about storytelling.
It's funny that Ted mentioned Bob Marley, and you talk about everyday details. Bob Marley has a bit where he talks about how his mom's always pulling down the back of her shirt, and then throughout the rest of the show, every time he talks about his mom, he's pulling down the back of his shirt or back of his sweater, and I cannot pull down the back of my sweater without thinking about poor Bob Marley's mother and what a good sport she must be. So, Ted, thanks so much
for
calling.
And she is, too. She's good sport.
Thanks so much for calling Ted. Going to Pat in Lewiston. Hi, Pat. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks so much. I love that you're doing this program. I have a question for Tim. I have been telling a series of Down East stories for about the last 5 years now, and they're now recorded and will be coming out on a CD. But I'm wondering why there are not women or more women who do Down East stories, Down East dialect.
Yeah, yeah, there should be. I you know, it's this, you know, honestly, I know a few of female storytellers, but, you know, it's unfortunately, it goes to me right to the heart of why aren't there more women doing fill in the blank? It's like I just saw a great cartoon where the man and wife were at the kitchen table and the man is reading the paper. He said, I see where they're putting a woman's face on the $10 bill. And the woman said, yeah, does that mean it's going to be worth $7? It was just like, I don't know why more women don't do it. But there have been some I'm thinking of Gracie Cleaves. She's great. There's several around, but by all means, you should, because I talk about geezettes in the main thing, and I had these great octogenarian women.
Well, now what are you doing, Tim? Are you going to be going? Now, where are you going today?
There's just really fabulous dialects and fabulous perspectives, and the woman's perspective, as in every other aspect of life, is a critical piece. So keep doing what you're doing. We need it.
Skylar Bayer.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. Thank you so much.
I was just going to say that I know there's a storytelling group called The Corner in Lewiston, and I've seen a few of their videos online, and they're actually a fair amount of female storytellers. They're not Down East, but they're there, and they're telling really good stories.
And I like that you mentioned, Skylar, The Corner in Lewiston, because I know that all over Maine there are storytelling groups. And really, if you Google Maine storytelling events, you're going to come up with all sorts of things going on around the state, and that, you know, you all here are representing a big, broad swath of people who are out here in Maine doing this kind of work. Pat, thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you, Pat.
And we're going to go to Dill in Bath. Hi, Dill. Go ahead. Dill, go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. We had an audio problem. Are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
When I listen to audiobooks or stories, as soon as the audio comes in, my mind starts creating the video that runs simultaneously with the audio. And I'm wondering if people on the panel have the video running as they speak or record. I know Tim can turn the video on and off in his mind, but wondering if the video in the story he reads is running.
So, Frederick, what about you? Are you always picturing the visual element of the story even as you're creating an audio story?
Well, that's what makes it so fun, is that you can have, and think about creating a visual scene of the main coast and, you know, what it takes to get all the equipment and all the actors and to do the scene. And then you just have a, you know, herring gull and the sound of a wave and boom, you're there instantaneously. So that to me is the great pleasure of the medium, is that your mind does this magic trick where that sound effect brings that alive. And to me, that's the best thing about it, is that no matter what we've done with CGI, the human imagination is way more powerful than anything a computer can do.
Yeah, that's critical. And the video playing inside your head is, to me, what emotionally binds you to the story. When I grew up listening to late night skip distance radio on like people like Larry Glick on Boston radio, and then the first time I was on Larry Glick's show, this is before you ever saw anybody's photograph of anybody on radio, I had this whole very complex image of what he looked like, and then he walked in the room. He didn't look a thing like he was. I felt like saying, no, get away. You're the wrong Larry Glick. You're not the
totally
Larry Glick that
experience.
I know, you know, and that's what Fred was talking about. That's an example of how deeply personally connected to the imagery of the story you become from listening. And anytime there's an adaptation visually, that blocks out the other potential. So you're going to hear people. If you hear a voice, people always tell me from my recordings, when I hear that recording, I think of my Uncle Fred or I think of my Aunt Jill or my so-and-so. And so they have this mental landscape of images of
so
people.
When they see you, they're disappointed, right, Steve?
that's dogged me all my life. They thought I was tall, dark, and handsome, and I'm, you know, short. And anyway, no, it's a very personal.
You're not short.
Deep, deep part of the connection comes from that visualization that that was just being brought up.
Dill, thanks for calling. We're going to go to Waterboro and Maureen. Hi, Maureen. Go ahead.
Hi. Mine was more of a comment or almost a plea. Often I listen to books in my car, and maybe my car isn't the same as a recording studio, and I find a lot of narrators don't know how to stage whisper so that when I'm listening, I'm always having to fiddle with the volume because they drop down to this whisper that can't be heard in my old clunker of a car.
So is that something you all are producing? Think about, though. Do you have to think about, gee, not many people are, you know, some people are going to be listening to this production on their phone with high-quality earbuds, and they're going to hear everything. But some people, many people, are going to be listening to this while driving in their car. They're bumpy on a bumpy road in Maine.
I have to tell you, at one of the best recording studios in Maine 20 years ago, I was doing a big project, and the engineer sat down, and he played it back through the beautiful clip speakers, whatever they were, and then he had a set of little plastic Radio Shack car, like used to be able to buy for, you know, 10 bucks at Radio Shack. He said he'd play it back on the big system, and he'd say, this is what it sounds like in here. And then he flips the switch, and he said, this is what it sounds like to folks driving around in their car. And that was exactly his point. When this woman who's calling from Waterboro, what she's dealing with is poorly thought through audio production. It's good audio production should take that into account. It should take into account the final user.
And Skylar, since you're using people who are not professional storytellers, are you finding that some people's voices just don't translate as well when recorded as others?
Yeah, no, that's very true. And I should say that the podcast that gets produced, you know, we only pick like half of the stories that actually get told at the shows. And sometimes they don't stand close enough to the mic, and that's what kills it getting to the podcast. So it does matter quite a bit.
All right. Well, thanks for calling, Maureen, and thanks for being a listener. We're going to go to Bar Harbor, or how would you say that, Tim?
Bar Harbor, Maine.
Hi, Mike.
Hi. First of all, I want to say quite a number of years ago, I was on the great TV auction with Tim Sample and got to use one of his favorite lines on him. My dress right out in the glove compartment there.
I want you to repeat that because we had laughter covering your...
People would accuse him of not being from Maine. He'd say, I've got my birth certificate right out in the glove compartment.
Yes, I do. I do. I'm a Fort Fairfield.
Use that line on him. But anyway, I'm calling about a series that Maine Public Radio did about 20 years ago called Read to Me. There were a group of about a dozen, 10 or a dozen readers, of whom I was one. It was hosted by Virge Bissett. It won a Caldecott Award, and it was reading a series of books half an hour a day and continued each following day till the book was done. And after the effort that went into that and the cost of producing it, I've always been amazed, and it must be on tape somewhere. I've always been amazed that Maine Public Radio has never aired that, and so I just wanted to bring that subject up.
Okay. Well, hopefully our programming director, Charles Beck, is listening.
Well, and Bill Kavnis used to do a great show on BUR in Boston, like that, where they read serially, read a chapter or two a day of a book, and you chuck in. It was a great reading aloud story. Yeah.
All right. Thanks for your call, Mike. We have an email from Benton. He says, Tim has told wonderful stories in places all over the country, but has he ever had a tough audience that just didn't get it? And how did he handle it? You've probably never had a difficult audience.
Of course. I had one just the other night. an audience, there are audiences. The thing about professional going out and work, I've been on stage for 40 some years. And if anyone who tells you they haven't encountered a bad audience is just blowing smoke. But the thing is that most of the time, people are there because they want to be there. Whether an audience is good has a lot to do with why they're there. If they have to be there because it's a corporate function and they'd rather be someplace else, or there's a whole lot. But if you're a pro, you get past that. If you can't stand the heat, you get out of the kitchen. If you can't, I owe a great debt of gratitude to Marshall Dodge, because Marshall Dodge taught me to have set material. I have about a half dozen lines you have to be practically dead not to laugh at. The other thing I got to say, I started off in some of the worst, sleaziest bars in Portland over 40 years ago, and you just keep moving. You just keep moving as you're going along, and you learn if there's 20 people and only one person is paying attention, you do the whole show with that one person. I'd rather not.
Probably
have to
good
do
advice
that.
In life for a lot of things. Pay attention to the person who's paying attention. Well, thank you all for joining us. Skylar Bayer, marine biology PhD student based at the University of Maine's Darling Center, and she is a producer for the Story Collider podcast and records the Strictly Fish Wrap Science Radio Hour podcast. Tim Sample is a humorist, author, storyteller, and his latest production is the audiobook Drunken Fireworks, which is by Stephen King and is only available as an audiobook at this point. It just came out. And Frederick Greenhalgh is a writer, director, and he's the producer of audio presentations. He's also the founder of Final Rune Productions. We want to thank our intern, Eliza Lambert, for her help with today's show. Jonathan Woodward ran the board. Our volunteer, Cindy Hahn, answered your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives, by visiting mpbn.net/MaineCalling. We also have a podcast. The executive producer of Maine Calling is Jonathan Smith. This month's Maine Calling Book Club at the end of the month is Monica Wood's book, Ernie's Ark. Hope you'll join us for that show. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
Make Maine Calling possible, as does Sweetser, offering mental health first aid classes in several Maine locations. Course description and class schedule at sweetser.org. By Freemasons in Maine, supporting Maine Public Broadcasting's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine. And Ollie's Trolley, offering narrated Wednesday tours of the town of Mount Desert, the 2.5-hour Off the Beaten Path tour. Tickets at ollie'strolley.com.
Diane Rehm Show, California passes a new law requiring all children enrolled in school to be vaccinated. It's the largest state in the nation to do so. The push to require vaccinations and the tension between public health and personal beliefs.
That's ahead on the Diane Rehm Show at 2 o'clock this afternoon here on MPBN Radio. This is member-supported Maine Public Broadcast. We are WMEW Waterville 91.3, WMED Calais 89.7, WMEF Fort Kent 106.5, WMEH Bangor 90.9, WMEF P Camden 90.5, WMEM Presque Isle 106.1, WMEA Portland 90.1, and online at mpbn.com.